This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, my guest is going to be Andrew Heller, and we are going to be talking about a really amazing book. It's called A Gift of the Heart. It's a story of two families, two lives, and one future. It is a very, very important book, and one that I know you will all, if you read it, it will touch your heart, because it is an amazing story, and I'm so looking forward to talking to Andrew at the bottom of the hour. But right now, I am so excited. When I was at BoucherCon a week ago, I was having so much fun, and I met so many wonderful authors, and then just at the last minute, just near the very end, I was getting ready to pack up, and there I saw two authors, and I said, oh, I have to stop and find out what they've written. And I was so happy that one of them is Hannah Mary McKinnon, and she's with me today. Hi, Hannah, are you there?
Hi, Patsy.
Thank
you so much.
Well, I am so happy to talk to you because, as I said, I so loved BoucherCon. Wasn't it great?
It was amazing. One of my favorite weekends, if not the favorite weekend of the year.
It was fantastic. There were so many wonderful people there, and I had such a wonderful time. It was my first BoucherCon. And I was very lucky that it was here, right here in my backyard here in I'm in Clearwater, Florida. And it was, of course, in St. Petersburg at the beautiful Vinoy Hotel.
Yes, it was my second one. The first one was in Toronto, so close to me. And this was my second time there. And my first time in Florida, actually. I'd never been there before, so it was a real treat.
Oh, well, it is such a... I've been up to Canada many, many times. I grew up in Detroit, so we were always going across to Canada, but it's something special. Florida is something special.
It was wonderful. I loved it.
And there were so many wonderful people, so many great authors there, so many of the very, very big famous ones, and then people who aren't quite famous, so famous yet, but getting there, because with your new book, it's called The Neighbors, this is a book, I tell you.
Woo. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I didn't know what to expect. You know, I met you there and I thought, okay, well, let's see what she writes. And I got, as a matter of fact, it's funny, I got so many free books there, but I didn't get one of yours. And so I had to actually, and I don't have to do this very often, I actually had to buy one.
Oh, well, I'm flattered.
And so, because, you know, I get like 10 books a week from the major publisher, so I don't really have to buy books too much nowadays. But I was so happy. I said, you know, I have all these books here. I have pile, but there was something intriguing. I looked at the book it's called The Neighbors, and I looked at it, read the little blurb, and I thought, ooh, I think that's just the kind of book I need. And so I got it, and I sat down. And I tell you, it was really, it was unexpected, all the twists and turns. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. That means so much, Patsy. It really does. That's splendid. I'm thrilled you enjoyed it. I'm thrilled you didn't see all of the twists coming in that case.
Well, no, that's what I love, because so often, you know, with the amount of reading I do, I really know what's going to happen, you know, like 30 pages in. So yeah. when I get surprised once, twice, three times, yeah, like I'm saying to myself, ooh, she's doing a good job here.
Well, that's quite the endorsement. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Okay. So, well, we mentioned I live in Canada now. That hasn't always been the case. I was born in the UK, in Manchester, actually, but didn't live there for very long. My dad is half Swiss, half English, and my mum's English. And Very early on, when I was one, we moved over to Switzerland because of Dad's work. Stayed there for a number of years, moved back to the UK, to the northern part, the Lake District, for about 3 years before returning to Switzerland, which is essentially where I grew up. I did studies there, went to Geneva to learn French, stayed in the French-speaking part for the longest time, had a long career in recruitment, very good career in recruitment, and 11 years after I'd met my husband, who is Canadian, hence the Canadian connection, we decided to move to Canada. That was in 2010. And that essentially is when I started writing.
Well, I love when people who have been, you know, in business careers and they've had a full, you know, employment life in some field or another, but always in the back of their minds, they know they want to write, or they have a book in them at least.
Well, I'd always, you know, like so many authors, I loved writing in school, but then, you know, career, life, kids, and all that happened, and I didn't write anything other than, I don't know, corporate policies or newsletters and that kind of thing for the longest time, and I really turned to writing more out of frustration than anything else, because when we came to Canada, I started my own company, and it failed in the most spectacular way. It crashed and burned. It was bad. It was not.
I've been there. I've done.
Have you?
I've been there, done that.
Not fun, is it?
No.
So, my husband said to me, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I'm, you know, sitting there licking my wounds, thinking, "I don't know. I don't know what I want to do. I'm so frustrated. I have no passions. I have no hobbies." And he said, "Well, what would you do if you could choose to be successful at one thing, what would it be?" And I immediately said writing, but didn't really know where to start. But an idea hit me for a book, which is not the way to go about it, really. You know, just waiting for inspiration to hit. Somebody somewhere took pity on me because it happened. I had this idea for my first novel, Time After Time, and I went with it. And, you know, 7 years later, here we are.
Wow. And, you know, the wonderful thing is once you get that passion and you discover that joy of writing, it really takes over your life, doesn't it?
It does. Honestly, now I sometimes I think, oh, you know, the corporate career and blah blah blah, it was great, it was lovely, it really was, but in comparison to the passion I feel about what I do now, getting up and creating these worlds and these characters and sending them out hoping that other people will enjoy them and like them, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. It truly is. And then the whole writing community, you know, going to VoucherCon, meeting other authors, meeting readers, meeting people such as yourself, it's amazing and incredibly fulfilling.
Well, you know, Mary Higgins Clark has been on the program a number of times, and we've always talked about this joy, because that's why I named my program Joy on Paper, because it is such a joy to see your words on paper.
Yes.
And you can keep doing it forever. You know, Mary Higgins Clark is 90 years old.
She's still writing. Yes.
Last year she wrote, you know, a best-selling novel. And it was actually, I think it was one of her best, and fresh and absolutely delightful. And so it's, writing is one of these things. It's like a gift from God that you can keep doing it and keep doing it and always find the joy in it. And of course, as you mentioned, the readers. I was so impressed at VoucherCon with the readers. Mm. They were so enthusiastic.
Yes, incredibly enthusiastic. It's just lovely. It really is to have that community. And one thing that struck me that I've never seen before in any industry that I've worked in, and I've worked in a number of them, is how supportive it is. How authors, readers, of course, too, but in particular, authors are so supportive of one another. It's almost like we don't see each other as competition. Just because somebody buys my book doesn't mean they won't buy yours or somebody else's. You know, it's incredibly supportive, filled with people who are there to help, are willing to help, who want to help. It's amazing, truly.
It is, and I witnessed that. Really, some of the biggest names, you know, like Lee Child, for goodness sake. Lee Child, I watched him. He would spend, you know, time with an up-and-coming author, somebody who's, just has their first book out, and he would talk to them, you know, on a one-to-one basis when, you know, he'd be stopped in the hallway. You know, people are sometimes shy, but he was very generous with his time, and he would just answer their questions, and he would encourage them. And then, of course, they're always willing, you know, you can always find some of them who will read your book and give you a blurb, which is always so helpful when you're dealing with publishers, because they are impressed when somebody really famous likes your book.
Yes, that's very, very, very true. We had a dinner at BoucherCon with, well, there are a number of people there, including Heather Graham, including Jude Devereaux, including Carla Negus, and they have written... You know, Heather's written over 250, 260 books, and these three, they were just so down to earth, so wonderful, so humble and lovely, the nicest people you could ever hope to meet. They were truly astounding.
And I was so impressed with the readers, how they came from all over. I mean, people from Minnesota and California and New York and Nebraska. I mean, they were coming from all over. And many of them have come. I mean, I talked to quite a few of them who have come to BoucherCon year after year after year.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they are so enthusiastic about reading and then meeting their favorite authors and then learning and discovering new authors. So it's a wonderful environment.
It really is. It really is. Next year's in Dallas. I'm already signed up.
Oh, me too. Listen, now when you wrote your first book, Time After Time, now you hadn't been published. So how did you go about my listeners? Because I have so many listeners who, you know, I always say at the beginning of the program, drawing papers for those who dream of writing. So how did you get your first book published?
Well, I made a lot of mistakes. So
that's good. You can tell us about it.
Yes, if through this interview I can help people not make the mistakes I made, that'll be great. So I had this idea for the novel, and I just decided, well, I read, therefore I can write. You know, should be fine. I've been a reader all my life. And in a way, that was a good thing that I was so wonderfully naive, because I just got on with it. I sat down, I wrote the outline, and then I wrote the chapters. I wrote the first draft really quickly, actually. And that's when it started to kind of go so well. So I gave it to a couple of people to read who were very lovely, who were very encouraging, which is great, but it was quite possibly 95% lip service and 5% actual critique, because I later found out you don't want to know just what's good about it, you particularly want to know what isn't. And I didn't get enough of that. So the first draft wasn't that great, but I thought it was good enough to send out to agents. Embarrassingly so. So I submitted it, and the general feedback was, we like the premise, but we don't like the execution. That was really the gist of it, which I found more encouraging than, your execution's fine, but your idea's rubbish, because then you'd have to change the whole idea, come up with something else. So I stuck with it, and it probably took me about two and a half years of kind of on-off editing. Submitted it to an author as well and asked her to edit it for me and go through it, and that was truly eye-opening. And eventually I got it to a point where I thought, okay, I can resubmit now to agents. I feel ready. I feel like I've done everything I possibly can. Plus brackets, I'm sick of this manuscript. Please don't make me read it again. These characters need to go away. And I found an agent. Now, the way I found an agent, I was at a workshop about how to get published. And I asked this guest speaker a question, purely, you know, just a kind of a throwaway question. The book is set in the UK mainly, also a bit in the US. Should I approach agents in the UK, in the US, in Canada, or doesn't it matter? And we got talking, and he asked me to send him the manuscript. And when I did, he shared it with his assistant, who since then has become an agent with her own list, and she took me on. So I did do the whole query letter thing. I went through that as well, which was you know, interesting, to say the least. But that was how I got to an agent. That was how how I managed to secure representation, and she then submitted the manuscript after we'd worked on it again for probably another 9-10 months or so, on and off. And then it went out to publishers and was acquired.
Wow. I am so glad that you explained that, because I go to a lot of workshops where I meet people who are writing, and they'll come up to me and they'll say, I finished it. I'm sending it off. I always like to, I hate to burst their bubble, but I always have to say, I don't think so. And so now they've heard it from somebody who's actually gone through it.
If I had somebody critique, because especially this was my first manuscript, to be honest, I didn't really know what I was doing right at the beginning. I just thought I had a good story and I was going to write it. And if I had had it critiqued properly from the beginning, I probably would have spared myself about 18 months or so and a lot of frustration. So certainly for me, because I didn't even have a critique group. I really had nobody, which is not the best idea. I would say get the work critiqued by either a critique group or somebody who does that, you know, editing for a living or whatever it may be, for the first manuscript, if you can, because
your mother or your sister won't tell you.
Exactly.
They just can't do it. They can't say, oh my gosh.
Exactly. You need someone ruthless. You need somebody that, preferably who you don't know, so they're purely judging your writing, not anything to do with your character, you know, or who you are. Really, honestly, that was the best thing I ever did, the best investment I ever made.
And of course, once you get, it's always wonderful though, once you get that first book done, published, and it's doing well, it's the second book is easy, is much easier both to, I think, to write and to get published.
Potentially. So with me, the Time After Time was acquired by Harper UK, by their Avon brand. And they gave us a digital first option or deal, really, where they brought the book out as an ebook, and it hasn't actually gone to print. And if I'm being completely honest, I was a little bit disappointed when I first heard the offer, because I wanted to go into the bookshop and see my novel, you know, on the table, and that wasn't going to happen. So when they offered another deal, another digital first deal for what became The Neighbours, we said no. We said, thank you very much. We're very happy that they offered another deal. That was great. But we really, really wanted to get a print deal. So we held our breath, said no, and waited for about another, I think it was about 6 months, which was a bit of a white knuckle ride, until Mira, also an imprint of HarperCollins, came along and offered me a two-book deal. The next one's coming out next year. For The Neighbours. So that was an incredible moment. It really was. But, you know, patience and determination, I think, in this industry are two of the things that you need. And I didn't realise that at the beginning, how much patience I would require to do this job. And I'm not naturally a patient person. So that was a bit of a challenge.
Now, The Neighbours, let's just tell the listeners a little bit about it. I am just telling them that everything after the beginning of the book, it's so many surprises and wonderful surprises. But what do you want? What's your little pitch that you give for your book?
Sure. Well, when people ask me what it's about, I basically say, imagine if an ex-lover moved in next door, somebody who you haven't seen for almost 20 years. And now imagine that you have secrets, not just secrets that you're keeping from the ex-partner, but also from your spouse, and lies that you're telling other people, including yourself. And imagine that all these things that you desperately try to keep buried start coming up to the surface. So that's essentially the gist of the book. An ex-boyfriend moves in next door to the main character, Abby. And in their wisdom, they decide not to tell their respective partners that they used to be together. And then
things start unraveling and getting tangled up and twisted and turned. And the reader can't put the book down because the reader says, I have to know what's going to happen next. I have to know what's...
Well, that's a pleasure to hear. I mean, that's always the feedback that you hope for, you know, that somebody says, I couldn't put it down. I just needed to know what was going to happen and how this was all going to end.
Well, I there are so many things I like about the book, but near the end we said, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, lies stay secret, and so they must. Ha-ha!
Yes.
This is a hint for everybody. They have to read this book. Now, I love one of the things that you do in the book. You have word of the day, and I love that. That was for
the
me.
Word of the day. That was funny, actually. That came from, so in the story, Sarah, who has this word of the day at the end of each of her chapters, she uses a word of the day calendar that her mum gives her for Christmas. And my husband had actually given me a word of the day calendar for Christmas. And I'm sitting there writing the novel thinking, look at all these funny words that I have to look up the definitions. I've never heard of them before. How could I incorporate that into the story? And that's where that came from.
Well, I thought it was very clever. I loved it because I got a word of the day too. So it was, I thought it was great. It was a nice device, and it made her sections different and memorable.
Great. That's perfect. Thank you.
And by the way, the Audible version. Whoa.
Did you listen to it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you think you enjoyed it?
Oh, yes. Have you?
I have. You know, I hadn't heard or listened to many audiobooks before. But to be honest, so there are four viewpoint characters in the novel and four narrators for the audio version. And it was like I was rediscovering the novel. I knew what was going to happen and everything, but the way they read it and the spin they put on things and the dramatization, I thought they were amazing. They really were. Kudos to the four who narrated it. I thought they were fantastic.
They were. I it was one of my favorite. I really love. I never used to like Audible books, actually. I was not a fan of them, but. One of the books that I listened to was Nora Ephron's Syracusa, which also has four voices. Mm-hmm. And it's such a brilliant, again, the narrators were so brilliant. The book is brilliant. And then the narrators just are so impassioned when they are doing it. And so when I listened to the Audible version of The Neighbors, I was so impressed with them. Wonderful voices, and they really got into the story, I tell you.
They did. I think they did too. I think I shall pass the message on. pass on the message that you enjoyed it. So
well, I know some authors, they can't, they're afraid to listen to their, to the Audible versions, and I say don't, because it's so much fun, actually. And I love. I have the book, and then I like to listen to the narration afterwards, and I think it's a fun way to do it, so you sort of double your pleasure.
Yes, that's exactly right, because it's almost like a different book.
It is. It's and then the next best thing would be to have a movie of it. So,
well, you know. Yes, I'd be very happy with that.
But of course, then the problem when they do the movie is they don't use a lot of your words.
They cut
as somebody who's written scripts based on books. I know that we don't use a lot of the words in the book. We say, why does this author have so many words? and then we take a hatchet and chop it up. But nevertheless, you get a few. So at least maybe we get the word of the day, because all of those are really good.
I get one or two in that.
Yeah, that would be fun. Well, I am so happy that I met you at BouchaCon. It was just serendipity that at the last minute there on the veranda of the Vinoy Hotel we met, and I was so happy that I did. And of all the, yours is the first book that I read from BouchaCon.
And is it? Oh, I'm so honored.
I mean, I'm there with Ian Rankin. I mean, my goodness, you know, I fell in love with this guy. He is like one amazing guy. What? Talk about charisma.
Absolutely. Oh. Well, I'm truly flattered and honoured. It was such a treat to meet you, and completely unexpected. So that was just, you know, a perfect ending to a wonderful conference. It really was.
Well, your name is Hannah Mary, and we have to put the Mary in there, McKinnon, because there is another Hannah McKinnon out there who's writing books too, right?
That's right, and she's wonderful, and her books are fantastic. I've read them all.
They are fine, but people can go to your website, and it's Hannah Mary McKinnon. And I am so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today. And the book is called The Neighbors, and people can get it wherever books are sold. They will enjoy it. It's suspenseful and a little bit twisted. It's wonderful. And I know that you're going to be back here next spring, right?
I would love to. Next book's coming out in May, so hopefully we'll get to talk then.
Absolutely. You put me on your list, and I always like to get books before everybody else. That's the fun thing about having a radio program about books. I get the books before everybody else.
You're on my list.
Okay, great. Talk to you next year.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, I will do a little commercial here.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Andrew Heller, the author of A Gift of the Heart. Wow.
Hi.
Hi, Andrew. Wow, this is some book.
Well, I appreciate it. Some book is quite a comment. I'm not sure how to take that.
Well, you know, it's really... It's so amazing. The story is amazing and beautifully told. And I think that people will be so moved by it. Every once in a while I get a book that just will inspire people and inspire people to do something good. And so that's why I wanted, you know, to have you on the program so you can talk to us about it, because it's an important subject. And I'll let you run with it and tell us how you first about the book, and then how about the movie about the book. Okay.
Okay. Sure. The origination of the book started out back in 1992 when my mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and I watched her fade away. It was heartbreaking for me, and you know, as a young man, I looked at all the things I could possibly do. How could I help in the biggest way? And being in the film and television industry and being a writer, I felt that I could reach more people on a global scale if I wrote the book and turned it into a movie. However, the movie was immediately optioned by another producer who sat on it for almost 8 years and did nothing with it. And then I decided to release the book a couple of years ago and then pursue getting the film done myself. So we are just over $500,000 into the budget, and we're trying to get the rest of our budget filled out, which is $1 million. And we've done a lot of firsts for this film. And the objective of the book has always been to tell the story of love, humanity, humility, and that sometimes the person that you may not wish to acknowledge or like, you know, for their race, their ethnicity, their religious belief, or something else, could ultimately end up being your savior and help a family member. But it tells the story of two different families from two different backgrounds that come from two different countries and live in two different worlds economically and socially. And the point behind it all is that if we sat back for 1 second and realized how important life is just on that scale alone, that we have so much more to do in the way of giving love to others. And it's a very joyous thing. It's something that makes me very happy. And I've purposed my life to make, you know, to make this happen. To tell the story of, you know, people coming together in a time of need and realizing that we can live a life of love, hope, humility, and respect for each other. That there's no need for us to constantly battle each other for one reason or another.
You know, if people would just realize that, you know, we all have one heart and we all have red blood, and it doesn't matter where you are, that's we're all under the skin the same, and outer differences really don't mean anything.
Exactly. And when you're dealing with life and death situations, which, you know, this covers, but the book isn't just about that. I mean, the book talks about bullying. The book deals with, you know, cancer. It deals with chronic diseases or, you know, deformations and organ donation and social and economic injustices. And it really covers life as it exists for us today. And it opens up those things that most people don't want to talk about or that nobody seems to want to talk about. And it really shows you the world as it exists from several different aspects and why people get these opinions and have these approaches where, you know, you disregard someone simply because of their outer appearance or where they came from. And this book really tries to send that message to the world that while we still breathe and live, there is hope. And while there is hope, we can still save lives. You know, too many people die every day, especially children. And one organ donor can save 8 lives. And when you think about 22,000, you know, children dying every single day from one form of cancer or another. I mean, we just had a very recent, you know, in the book we talk about glioblastoma multiforme, which is an exceptionally aggressive and predominantly untreatable brain cancer. And we talk about this with one of the children in there. And it just so happens that that's what John McCain died from. That's what Senator Kennedy died from. So it really brings to light things that are happening in our daily lives that we're missing right around us and people we know. And this book tells that story, and we've broken every rule book in the world with this. I mean, we've got commendations from the mayor of Orlando, from the Arkansas governor, from a Louisiana state senator, from the Texas governor. We're getting commendations like crazy because they want to see this movie happen. And we're also the first movie in history to have a mission statement, which actually says we're going to donate a large portion of our net proceeds to children with cancer.
Well,
and everything that, you know, I'm doing loops into that. We just started, we just shot a pilot called Trailer Park Tales, and we're premiering at the end of this month. And we're doing the same thing with everything that's being produced. We have global distribution for all of it, and that's Trailer Park Tales is a television series. And we're going to siphon off, you know, a large portion of the net proceeds from that to do exactly the same thing, to help and do as much as we can globally to get not only get the message out, but continue to help and keep that moving. So it's so important to us that listeners, you know, go to our site at giftoftheheart.com, buy the book. There are other books. There's books there for children. I've written 18. I'll be re-releasing a whole bunch of my books next year again. And I really encourage them to support us, because that's exactly where the money's going. It's going to get the film made so that it can go out globally, and we can send this message in an artistic form. And it's the only way I know how. I don't have the expertise in other areas to do it. So I did it using what I knew and what I could do the best at with the most impact.
Well, you told in the book, you tell a very touching story about a father and son who come from Cuba. And I think that when you, it's always when you're raising funds and you really need people to visualize, they need to put a face on you know, when you're just asking for funds, it's not as personal. But once they read this book, I think you've done a beautiful job in writing about this father and son. Tell us about the inspiration for this.
Well, you know, when I was thinking about writing the story, you know, I was only really dealing with my mother at that time, but I had lost other friends to cancer by then. But now it became personal for me. And I spent probably about a year just cogitating and thinking about it. And I thought, well, what is the thing that impacts people the most? How do I get their attention? And I thought, you know, this Cuban thing with these people that risk their lives to escape such depravity to come to the United States across, you know, to the Keys in Florida. And if I make the story about that and about the children as opposed to an adult, it will get more attention. So that's what I focused on, because I felt that that would touch people's heart.
And it does. It does. You write so lovingly, and so there's a gentleness to it when you're telling the story about this father and son relationship, and I was so impressed with it.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I really wanted to bring that out, you know, that ultimately there are no differences, but we as adults forget sometimes, you know, what it's like to be a child, because we're so busy working or allowing the world co-opt our sensitivities and our humility and our love for our fellow man. But when you throw children into the mix, it really shows that no matter what language you speak, no matter what country you live in, cancer and all forms of social injustice has no language, has no borders. And this shows that. So it was very deliberate on my part to really show the disparity and yet the commonality of life itself and how important they are. And especially for, you know, fathers and sons and mothers and daughters, you know, that the connection should never be lost. And love is always there. All we have to do is reach out and embrace it.
Now, so you've also written the script for the movie, right?
Yes, I did.
Now, are you crowdfunding for the film?
We tried that some time ago, and, you know, we didn't get a lot of money. So we used that for seed money to get to where we are now. So I don't think we'll be crowdfunding again. You know, like I said, we're about 60 to 65% of the way there. We have global distribution. I mean, we have so much in place that most films don't even have, and we haven't even rolled the camera yet. But like I said, if they go to the website, they can buy books, they can donate, they can see the trailer. We shot the trailer, starring Austin St. John, the original Red Power Ranger, and John Schneider.
It's beautifully done. The trailer is so good. Very impressive.
And we'll be adding more stars once our budget is filled out. But it's a long process. I mean, most first indie filmmakers take 7 years.
We're only
2.5 years in, and I would expect that we'll be shooting our film next year. Even our distributor is talking about possibly backing the film with their funds. And then we have other outlets and other people that we're constantly talking to that may be interested in getting behind us on this.
Well, I hope so, because as I said, I think you've done a remarkable job in putting a human face to the story, and one that will move people. And if the book gets into the hands of the right people, I believe that you'll get the funding for this, because it is an important subject. And it's always so wonderful when a writer or a filmmaker has a passion for a project and it comes through. And so I hope that, you know, at some point, and now, of course, there's a little bit more money out there for films in general, with Amazon and with Apple Prime, Amazon Prime and Hulu and all of them now funding.
Oh, yeah.
So we hope that it will get to the right hands, because everybody it doesn't matter what industry they're in, they've been affected by this, and they've been affected.
Absolutely.
And so I think one of the nice things about your book is that because you have told such a touching story and with characters who are really, you know, will grab at the heartstrings, that you've done a great job here.
Well, thank you so much. And I think the best thing I can tell the listeners is you won't be disappointed in reading this book. You will really enjoy it. It will, you know, I'm not going to lie to you, it's going to tug at your heartstrings, but it's really going to open your eyes, and it's going to make you want to step out and smell the flowers and realize that life's too short to be closed in and closed out from the reality of life that happens today. And by helping us send this message to the world, you're helping, you know, children battle cancer and families that really need it. I mean, there's so many stories that I hear every day in and day out where families lose everything because they have to be at the hospital where their child is being treated, and they can't afford it, and the costs are astronomical. And, you know, it's my purpose. I've made it my life's purpose to dampen the blow. Obviously, I can't do everything and fix everything, but this movie has the potential to make many hundreds of millions of dollars to help an enormous amount of the population on a global scale. And that's the greatest impact I can give by writing this story and telling the story. So I truly encourage all you listeners to go to the site, check it out.
Okay, repeat the website again.
It's Gift of the Heart.com. Easy to remember.
Easy to remember. And the book is available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And and where are you located? You're located in Orlando?
I lived in Orlando for 30 years, and then I moved up to Atlanta, and then a friend of mine who has a terminally ill family member, also from cancer, had to leave the state for several months, and they asked me to come back down to Orlando and house sit. So I'm actually down here, and that's how Trailer Park Tales came about, because I was like, well, I got to do something. So we, you know, I produced Maximus Films, and I produced the pilot, which also got picked up for distribution to 89 countries, and we're premiering that at the end of the month. And I actually sent you an invitation, so we would love to see you if you can make it.
Well, that's what I was thinking, that I might just get over there, because I so support your cause. I think that you're doing really amazing work, and work that, you know, I hope my listeners will feel the same way, because I talk always about joy and finding joy in your writing and in your reading and in supporting an important book like yours. So, you know, Andrew, I think that you're an amazing person, and I so hope that people will just go ahead and get this book and then support you, and hopefully get it in the hands, if anybody knows anybody who's got extra money. And there are lots of people now who are doing very, very well with the stock market. So we can hope that there are people out there, and it is true that there is much more sort of free money out there that people didn't have.
If they order, you know, if they order from the website, the books come to me. I sign them and send them out.
Ah, okay.
So they actually get my signature on it. And the other great thing is our spokesperson has just now been named the Lifetime International Beauty Queen. And she is a cancer survivor herself. So she does a lot of events to help.
Sheila Schaffner.
Yes. And she's actually coming in for the premiere. She's actually flying in for the premiere, so she will be here in person as well. And she's a wonderful person to interview. She has great stories to tell. And, you know, we've become great friends. And she's a great, you know, spokesperson, because, you know, basically she does what we're trying to accomplish, but just in a much larger scale, which is help children and families in need. And put the word out, send the message that with a little bit of love, humility, and patience, we can do a better job with our fellow man and helping them. And, you know, this story really will touch your heart. I have not gotten a single person to say that they were not totally enamored and touched by it, and have bought more books to give away during the holidays and Christmas. And it makes a great gift.
It does, and Thanksgiving is coming up, and everybody, when they're visiting people, this is also a great gift to give on Thanksgiving, so everyone can be thankful for the joys of life and for being able to support a cause that's so important. And Andrew, I just want to again thank you so much. I found you. We found each other on Facebook, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that was amazing, because I'm working to on more and more on Facebook, and so you're the first author I got off of Facebook, and I was very, very happy about that.
Well, that is awesome, and Patsy with the B. Sure, the joy of writing. Yes, absolutely. And it's been such a pleasure to be on your show, and thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I have no idea how much I appreciate that, and I appreciate your listeners taking the time to look, if nothing else, to just delve into it and see what we're all about, and see all our accolades from governors. I mean, these are things that governors don't give out, and they're very hard to get, and we've gotten some great, you know, some great accolades from governors, from states, like Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, and from the mayor of Orlando. So we're very pleased that we're still having an impact, even though we haven't got the film, you know, shot
well,
yet.
Well, you're
good. We know we're going.
I know. I'm confident you will, Andrew, because you've done a great job. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. I will stay in contact, and I will have you back again, okay?
That is absolutely fabulous, and you're very welcome. Thank you to all your listeners. God, may they have a blessed day.
Thank you.
God bless them with all the good things that God can give. And we hope to see you at the premiere.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Bye-bye now.
Bye now.
Bye. Okay. Wow. What a book. Oh, it's two children, two lives, and only one can survive. And it's a remarkable and moving book, and you'll have tears in your eyes, but you'll be happy that you read it. So it's called, again, A Gift of the Heart by Andrew Heller. And it's a book that you should get and just support the cause, because it's such an important one. And I think Andrew's just doing a brilliant job. Anyway, you get emotional when you read a book like that. Now, I do want to remind everyone, as I mentioned, Andrew and I met through Facebook. And I've been doing more and more Facebook. And I'm going to be putting up so many of the photos that I got at BoucherCon, including photos with me. And Lee Child, my goodness, he is so tall. And Ian Rankin, who is so sweet. Now, this is Sir Ian Rankin, my goodness. He was amazing. I had no idea. You know, you until you meet some of these people, you don't know really how charismatic they are. But I will say that of all of them, Ian Rankin was like the top of the line. And of course, I was so happy to meet Larry Block, Lawrence Block, who is a mystery writer grandmaster. And his daughter, Jill Block, was there. And I admire her so much. And of course, my favorite, Carol J. Perry, was there. And she's Witch City Mysteries. And she has a new book coming out. And she's going to be here on Tuesday to talk about that. And it's her Christmas book and another adventure up there in Salem. And I'm so looking forward to having Carol here in the studio with me. And it's Bells, Spells, and Murder. And it's a special Christmas edition of her Witch City Mysteries. And so she will be here. Also, Rita Moreau is going to be live in the studio. And she's going to do a book buzz live. That's going to be fun. And as we call her, Radio Rita, she loves to promote books. And she's such a help to me. And so I'm really excited about having both of them in the studio next week. And then I have some really exciting news coming up in October. I have Bria Burton and lots of exciting guests. Anyway, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And it won't happen unless you start writing. So get busy, start writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. I appreciate everything you do. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now. Bye.